things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Welcome to October.
I said I was ready, Freddy. I'm not ready, Freddy.
Ah! I feel lied to.
I was an unprepared Paul.
Unprepared What?
What?
Myrtle? Unprepared? No, where was I going? I don't know. I'm going to delete that.
Unprepared? No, you're not.
Yeah.
No, you never delete the stuff I tell you to delete.
The things you say are funny.
No, they're not. They're uneducated.
No, they're not.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Anyway, welcome to October.
Code Orange.
Code Orange is here. Oh my God, you guys, we have so much happening this month.
Oh my God. Okay, so listen, we have a lot to talk about.
We got to get down to business. I need you to get out your calendar because
we need to share our plans with you. Number one, later this month, if you are out and about and in the Fort Wayne area,
come see us at DeadCon.
Come see us at DeadCon.
This has been released on social media. We mentioned it in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
But we are so excited. There's going to be so many creepy vendors there. A lot of horror actors are going to be there, which you know I am dying. I already have my outfit planned.
We're so excited. This is actually my first con.
Yeah.
So, and to like go is like a booth.
A vendor.
Is so exciting.
Oh, it's going to be so good. We are, can I tell them about the giveaway?
Yeah.
Okay. We're doing a giveaway.
Yes, we are.
On Halloween. You have to be following us on Instagram.
Yep.
That will include a Ouija board. We're going to let
some merchy gibby grabs.
Yeah. Pick out a merch item, like a t-shirt from the store. And then we're going to do like a mug, I think, or something. Like
we
that.
Have a couple tricks up our sleeve.
And maybe some treats.
And maybe some treats too.
You just don't know.
You'll come out, see us at DeadCon. It's downtown Fort Wayne. Really exciting stuff. So if you're local, we would love to see you and meet you guys in person. And speaking of Instagram, we have an event happening later this week.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. The fifth is normally grab bag day.
Uh-huh.
We are going to be doing grab bag live.
Grab bag live.
On Instagram. And we are so excited. This is the stuff we've been telling you we've been planning for months and months and months and months.
And it's finally here.
It's finally here.
We're so glad you're finally here.
Oh, shit. You're here.
You're so pretty.
That's how I feel about fall all the time. Oh, God. What else? Oh, we have a special episode coming up.
We do. We are bringing back a mashup.
I'm so excited. I loved doing mashups, but we both have full-time jobs. So six episodes a month was a lot.
It was.
But we knew that we would be able to like pull that out for special occasions, and Halloween is a special occasion.
How much more special can an occasion possibly get than October?
Right.
The whole month is an occasion in and of itself.
Absolutely. So we are making this a just chock full of so much
spooky content and hebe-habs.
Yes. Speaking of spooky content, if you are interested in maybe finding new podcasts, I will link a playlist for you in the show notes. Our friends over at Alluring are putting together a spooky playlist for October, and they're going to be highlighting their favorite podcasts, and we were lucky enough to be chosen as one of the podcasts that they're going to be featuring in this playlist.
The chosen one.
Yes. And
it's great. It's podcast. So cool. It's amazing.
Yeah. They sent me a little sticker on the fridge.
Cute.
Yeah, they're so cute. I love them.
They're great.
I will link that Spotify playlist in the show notes so you can go and maybe find a new spooky podcast.
So we know there's a lot happening. So DeadCon is on October 16th
and
17th. The grab bag, we will be live. Just go follow us on Instagram. We will post all the details over there. We'll go live on the evening that the episode is supposed to release.
Yep, that's October 5th.
October 5th. And then the mashup
is going to be on Halloween.
On Halloween. So we're throwing a lot of content at you. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Jenny and I have never been more excited.
We just have been planning our little hearts out.
Literally plotting.
Planning and plotting. Scheming and a plotting.
Yeah.
As we usually do.
As usual. We've had breakfast meetings about this.
Yes.
Jenny and I used to do Friday breakfast every Friday while we were hating our full-time jobs with like a black soul-sucking passion.
Pre-pod.
And so we've kind of gotten to like bring that back into our lives.
Which has been really, really fun.
But in the past, it was like kind of a... tell me about your week. Tell me what's going on. And now it's like we both get our laptops out and like we have pens and notepads.
We
and
have
like
to set up
the hotspot and we camp in
a restaurant,
a diner.
And the servers politely ask us to leave.
They're like, you've been here since 8 o'clock. It's noon.
Please go. What else can you possibly be doing here?
Right. You cannot have any more pancakes.
You ate half of a toast. Go away.
That's Jenny.
That's me.
I'm like, I would have like to have 3 pancakes, 4 slices of bacon, 2 eggs. I would also like jam. And Jenny is like, I will have toast with egg. And if you could have like a tomato slice, that would be excellent.
Stop, you're making fun of me.
And that I'm is... like, This is not breakfast. That's a snack.
The last time we went, they were very liberal with the tomato slices and I couldn't eat all of them. And I felt guilty about it. They gave me a lot. They gave me like 5 slices.
They did.
And I just asked
like,
for
this girl doesn't eat. We have to make sure that she's got enough tomato slices.
I couldn't even eat all of it.
I cleared my plates. And Jenny was like, no, I'm not going to eat that other piece of toast or that egg.
I just couldn't. And it's not my fault. My stomach is doing some weird ish.
Yeah, it's up to some biz right now.
Yeah, so we're just not going to question it.
No, and Jenny's not pregnant before anybody decides
it's impossible.
To come at us in our comments.
I'm not pregnant, but I have thrown up every morning for the past like 6 consecutive mornings.
Yeah.
So, but you can't Google what that is. If you're like, why am I throwing up in the morning? It's like you're pregnant.
And you're like, but I'm not.
I swear to you, I'm not. It's
impossible.
It's absolutely impossible.
So if we have any doctors listening that want to shoot Jenny a message on Twitter,
let me
know what's wrong with her stomach. That'd be cool.
I'm not really sure that we appeal to medical professionals.
I don't think that we... Never mind. That was mean. We do have professional listeners.
Well, we have professional listeners. I can tell you that they're not, like, high-level scientists because we would make them... We would get a lot of hate mail.
We would. We don't get a whole lot of hate mail, so that tells me that people don't have any more education.
We don't get any hate mail. Have you ever gotten a hate mail?
No.
We had like a 3-star review.
Yeah, the only thing that we've gotten is like star reviews, but they don't have comments. So I can't see why people don't like it. I just see like you received a 2-star review.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but why?
I can imagine. I can imagine
all the people that hate like My Favorite Murder for like gabbing and stuff like that. Like, this isn't for you.
Speaking of gabbing.
Yeah.
Do you want to gab about Oogie?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm excited.
All right.
So.
It's paranormal, which I think we did not plan how this like cycle was going to work
out.
What,
the Julius calendar?
Yeah.
No, we didn't plan
it. But I do think that it is super cool that we started with a paranormal for Spooky Month.
I agree. Even if we did try to plan it, we couldn't have planned it.
No.
Better than that. Okay. My sources.
Oh, I'm so heaped.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm going to read these at the end.
Oh, okay.
I put a note to myself at the end.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to turn out the lights and make it smell.
Yes, we have some like candles going. Yes. Taylor's lurking about in the shadows
like a goblin. Trying to not hit this. Oh Lord. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh.
You can hear me scooching, making all the ruckus.
Taylor.
Yeah, Jenny.
Taylor in editing.
Uh-huh.
I would like for you to play
uh-huh.
some ominous.
Okay.
Like maybe like church organ.
Okay. I can
thunderstorm.
Do that, I'll do what I can for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want this underneath your like intro?
Underneath okay. my intro. I'm setting a mood.
All right. I love.
Allow me to use creative writing tools. Dear Father Kapsner, wish to endorse your pamphlet, Vade Satana, as a potent aid to faith in the value of sacramentals, relics of the saints, and prayers. No more vivid picture has been presented to us of the losing battle against the camp of Christ. Nothing has made our insistent floundering from the camp of Christ to the camp of the devil appear so absurd. The memory of it has instilled of the hatred of Satan and the eternal misery of his permanent army. It evokes a continuous inventory of one's life, savoring of the minuteness of the final judgment. That it will save many souls, we have no doubt. That some will borrow fruitless fright is also possible. But for them, one must say that if the picture is terrible, the real thing must be worse. Agony is the lot of all, at least once. Satan has seemed too unreal. It would be a pity if this pamphlet were to be suppressed because some weak souls have been made to sense him more vividly than the author intends. We were granted an interview with the exorcist, Father Theophilus, after reading your account of the diabolical possession. We treasure the experience as an intimate glimpse into the life of a pious priest, very gifted in a specialty which should command the patronage of the medical profession, rather than to be allotted to the realm of superstition or necromancy. We anxiously await the complete report of this case. Yours very truly, J.D. Dundon, M.D.
Okay.
This letter was written and published in the foreword of Begone Satan, a sensational expulsion of the devil written by Carl Vogel, which occurred in Erling, Iowa in 1928. The facts laid out within this account were testified to by Reverend Joseph Steigler, who was a personal witness. The Holy Roman Catholic Church, and in turn the Vatican, recognizes the existence of Satan, embraces the idea of his impious demon army and their ability to overcome us and possess our earthly body and our soul. The Holy Mother Church hands over major and minor powers, or orders, bequeathed by Christ, the Son of God, to members of his clergy. One of these minor orders is the Order of Exorcism. When the bishop confers this order, he pronounces, "You receive the power to place your hand upon those possessed, and through the imposition of your hands, the grace of the Holy Ghost, in the words of exorcism, you shall drive evil spirits out of the bodies of those so possessed." The solemn and powerful meaning attached to the ceremony and to not conferred in any other order begins with the chosen when they receive the right to place their hand upon those possessed. The faithful who are selected to receive these orders from the Holy Mother Church will be invited by the bishop to join him as an effective agent in expelling the evil spirit from those possessed. The Vatican fervently believes that Satan has succeeded in making men so indifferent, and the Dark Lord's actions of misleading men is one of the devil's greatest and most advantageous accomplishments, as people rarely listen to things of a superstitious nature. A priest set on doing an exorcism has many tools in his arsenal against evil. The blessing of holy water, the blessings and benedictions of the church and her sacramentals, and a prayer by Pope Leo VIII. It is a powerful and solemn prayer of exorcism for priests against the fallen angels and evil spirits. It is said that this pope, after God permitted him to see in a vision the great devastation Satan is carrying on in our times, composed a prayer of exorcism in honor of Saint Michael that is now recited in the vernacular as one of the prayers said after Mass. All of these weapons against Satan were used in the fight to save Anna Euclid's soul from the smoke and sulfur of eternal damnation.
Oh. The smoke and sulfur. I am already so enraptured by this whole story. I feel like this is the most silent I've ever been in my whole life, just staring at you.
It's so good. Anna is a pseudonym for Emma Schmidt, born March 23rd in Aries in 1882.
In Aries.
In Milwaukee and raised in a Catholic home in Marathon, Wisconsin. Not much is known about Anna's mother, except that it is suspected she died around the mid-1890s. Anna's father, Jacob Schmidt, was a drunk who had a strong distaste for the church and their foundations. Both were German immigrants, and her father was an accused alcoholic, and it's widely believed that he sexually assaulted his daughter regularly.
I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
I was getting ready to be like, hell yeah, Jonathan like likes to drink and also hates the church, but it went downhill.
Yeah, really quickly. Hmm. Also present in her life was her aunt, Minnie. Presumably, she's in the picture to take care of the womanly duties of the household after Anna's mother's passing. Anna herself was a well-mannered child who was devout in her faith and attended Mass regularly, sometimes a couple times a week.
Wow, that's a lot.
Until she wasn't.
Okay.
The change was sudden and abrupt when Anna turned 14. She started to display severe issues with attending Mass, being physically affected when she entered into a church or taking the Eucharist. She fought compulsions to smash jars of holy water and physically attack priests and other lewd acts. She displayed unhindered sexual appetites and was plagued with vile thoughts, lewd in nature. She would blurt out incredibly obscene things and describe in detail things she wanted to do to the other churchgoers.
Ooh.
When her eyes landed upon a holy object, she would feel violently ill. She could no longer recite scripture, and she slipped into depression as the world that she was slowly losing her mind. Anna herself was distraught with her upsetting displays of behavior, and she was scared by her aversion to things that once brought her inner peace. She had no control over her emotions, more importantly, her rage. At first, it was thought that this was a reaction to her mother's passing, but she became more and more unhinged.
Okay.
During her outburst, she was wild and uncontrollable, but after her episode had passed, she had no recollection of what happened. She became reclusive, embarrassed, and alone. She refused to leave her house, not even for church, and refused any visitors. Her father was hoping things would soon blow over, but as things escalated, he sought help from outside of the home. Medical professionals and psychiatrists were brought in to consult, but no conclusive reason was ever able to be found. A leading specialist was brought in to examine her. After a full workup by the specialist, it was reported that Anna didn't have, quote, the least sign of nervousness, and she was normal in the fullest sense. To be fair, we're talking like 1908. So psychiatry and knowledge and treatment of mental illness was still rudimentary, which I still feel like
early days.
And there's no real regard for grieving, sexually abused, prepubescent teenage girls, or the pain and affliction that like come from that.
Mm-hmm. They're just expected to go from like being a child to being a woman that's capable of taking care of a household. And anybody who's been a 14-year-old girl knows that
you're not capable of doing anything.
A very strange time of outbursts.
Yes.
And I can only
imagine. Uncontrolled thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that compounded with, like, losing your mother so young, having an alcoholic father.
Who sexually abuses you.
And having so much shame, that the church teaches you.
Yeah.
And that would be a really hard time.
Yeah.
And then I can see why it would lead to the idea of possession.
Upsetting behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things were getting more and more unsettling at home, and Anna's strange behavior continued. At first, she uttered strange, guttural noises, which turned into unfamiliar words, and soon full, haunting phrases.
Oh, God.
In Latin.
Oh, God, that's not good. That's not good. See, I can get down with, like, you know, it's just a girl going through some shit until she starts speaking Latin.
It is a language that a teenage girl born from German immigrants in Iowa should have no knowledge of.
Wait, Milwaukee? Iowa.
Yeah, the exorcism happened in Iowa. She was born in Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. And I said Milwaukee. It's the West.
Milwaukee's in Wisconsin.
Is it?
Yeah.
Nice.
Isn't it? Is it? I don't know.
Yes.
I feel like yes.
I think it is.
I think it is too. Even sitting through Orthodox Mass after Mass, she spoke of things in Latin no girl should know.
Oh.
In a language there's no way she should have been able to understand. And sadly, Anna's uncontrollable behavior continued for years.
Oh no.
Tension in the home was palpable. Anna, her father, and her Aunt Minnie. Oh, Aunt Minnie. Aunt Minnie had her hands where they did not belong.
All over her brother-in-law.
All over her brother-in-law. rumors swirled about the nature of their peculiar relationship in an affair, an untimely death of Anna's mother, an obstacle removed for love or lust or whatever lies in between.
Uh-oh. If that's not a doorway for the devil,
I don't know what is. There are many rumors surrounding Minnie and the secrets that she kept. She is the person who first mentioned demonic entities infesting her niece. Aunt Minnie had prayed, and Aunt Minnie had done her research, and Aunt Minnie called upon the church.
Did she now?
She did.
Okay.
Enter Father Theophilus Reisinger.
Theophilus.
I'm just going to call him Theo because my brain has a hard time reading it.
With the rest of it?
Yeah.
It's understandable.
He was a Capuchin monk from Bavaria. He traveled the globe far and wide professing power of Christ.
Wow.
During his time, he encountered many souls in prison by demonic possession and washed them in the blood of Christ and cast the evil back into the pit from whence it came. He became a necromic expert in exorcism and was called to perform his holy duty over Anna. He observed her aversion to religious imagery and her visceral response to prayer and holy rites, her inability to tolerate the blessed sacrament, and he noticed that when conversational Latin was used, there was no reaction from Anna or her demons, although English and German were both used in the home. Her knowledge of Latin still remained a mystery. Then she started screaming in Hebrew and Polish.
What?
And Italian. And when she was given articles that were secretly blessed with holy water, she would act out in a fit of rage, tearing clothes off of her body and throwing items across the room. Father Theo, a smart man, decided he would give something new a try. He would douse her in holy water, but replace the holy water with just regular tap. He reasoned that if there was a reaction, that it would be a fraudulent case of possession. They would have nothing more on their hands than just a disturbed young girl.
I love a skeptical priest.
Same. Especially one who's an expert in exorcisms.
Yeah.
He was like, I just want to make sure.
Let's just do a test.
A testarooski.
Uh-huh.
And see what the deal is. So.
Test group. What are they called?
Focus group.
Focus group.
It's a holy water focus group. Focus group of demons. During one of her many fits, Father Theo splashed her with this water, and alas, there was no reaction, no outburst or pain, and Father Theo was astonished that she was not faking. So on June 18th, 1912, at 30 years of age, nearly 15 years after her symptoms started, Anna underwent a full exorcism. Although the cause of the possession was unknown at this time, it seemed to be a success, and Anna went on to live out the rest of her days in peace, her hope renewed for her future, and all was well.
I don't believe you.
It seemed that the forces of darkness were not through with Anna. Over the next few years, her turmoil and trouble again found her, and she proclaimed that she was burdened again with perverse and indecent cravings, sexual in nature. And she was tormented by the spirit of her father and aunt, who had since passed.
Okay.
Something dark seemed to rise inside of her, and trying to describe her experiences, she said, "There is something running up to the back into my head, and from there into my heart." Capping her terror, she reported hearing nightly voices coming from below. She is no longer able to live her day-to-day life, unable to care for herself, and again, she seeks relief from the church. In 1928, at 46 years old, Anna calls upon Father Theo. He's greatly concerned that her soul was again under attack, and this time he needed reinforcements.
Oof.
So Father Theo called the bishop, who sanctioned the exorcism under one condition. Father Theo originally wanted to bring Anne to his current parish for privacy and the hope that she could return to her life as if her soul never hung in the fray between good and evil. He petitioned for the exorcism to take place in the church, but the bishop would hear none of it. As an alternative, Father Theo petitioned for the act to take place in the convent on the outskirts of town, ran by Franciscan nuns. The bishop allowed this only if the nuns accepted the petition. But Theo had already received it, and the preparations began.
Okay.
On August 17th, 1928, Anna was taken to the convent, and on August 18th, her exorcism began. It lasted until August 26th. She was exorcised again from September 13th through September 20th, and her final 8-day session from December 15th to the 23rd. Her exorcisms were grueling and violent. Her body deteriorated until she was unrecognizable. Her head, lips, and face swelled to an impossible degree. She refused food or drink of anything, but continually vomited up rot containing tobacco leaves, sludge, and tar.
What? What?
Yeah.
Girl. No, 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 no.
Oh, yes.
No. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. During a session one day.
I decline.
I'm going to need you to resubscribe because we are not done.
Need you to resubscribe.
During a session one day, Anna appeared to be thrown across the room. She was a petite 5'7", just 135 pounds. But one priest who was helping and known to be strong as a bear reported being unable to lift her from the ground, even with the help of three others.
She was like, excuse me, I'm now lead.
I'm lead. She was stuck to the ground. The priest observed Anna undergoing some chilling physical changes. Her abdomen, as described by the priest's records, would either move up or down with terrific rapidity beyond the power of a human being, or swell up to the immense volume of a big barrel on which no weight would make an impression. At those times, according to witnesses, the iron rods of the bed bent to the floor, and during trances of possession, attending priests tried to open her eyes, which were shut impossibly tight. When they forced her lids open, they said that they found a thick yellow skin over her eyes with something like a big pea seen moving beneath them.
That's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like a pea?
A pea.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exorcisms were held in a bedroom in the convent. Anna's teeth gnashed as her arms were bound to the bed frame. Theo would begin with the Litany of All Saints, evoking the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost in the name of Jesus Christ. And when Theo recited the words, Lord, save your people from the persecution of the devil, an agitated voice from Anna moaned and yelped. The exorcist wished to determine the identity of the spirits, and according to the doctrine, they had to tell them their names. In order to expel spirits, he needed to elicit confessions from them. He detected distinct voices, some deep, some raspy or shrill. Some were bestial, and still others sounded more human. Theo was intrigued when he heard a feminine voice that was not Anna's and tried to engage. Is there a woman here? Father Theo asked. Yes. I command you to tell me your name, he replied. My name is Minnie, Minnie, Minnie.
What?
Answering in threes was common among the voices that presented themselves as malicious spirits. Are you living or dead? Asked Theo. I am dead. Are you damned? Yes, I am damned.
Because she killed her sister to be with her sister's husband!
By one account, Anna, when possessed with Minnie, would spit and vomit so much that Theo had to constantly wipe off his cassock. Did you give...
Are you possessed? Are you possessed, Jenny? Is that why you're throwing up?
You know, perhaps. Perhaps. Let's not... I would really like to be able to speak Italian if that is the case.
That'd be very helpful.
Still just okay at English and worse at German.
Okay, English. Okay-ish at best.
Okay-ish at best. So, did you give something to the girl? Father Theo asked, by means of which the relation of this girl to the devils was established. I have done that, the voice answered, then acknowledged lacing Anna's food and drink with bewitched herbs years earlier. If the voice was to be believed, the devious secrets of Anna's abusive home life were coming to light. Theo concluded Minnie's poisoning created a condition in Anna's body which gave the spirits, as they interpreted it, a satanic rite to enter her. Father Theo called in assistance from Reverend Steiger, an old colleague who was not comfortable with the exorcisms. He often had to leave the room as Anna convulsed and screamed, and Bishop Drum checked in with Steiger asking if he'd properly thought through the decision to allow Anna Schmidt and Erling for the exorcism. Oh, it's Emma Schmidt is her real name.
Okay.
I will caution you most emphatically that there may be some serious consequences resulting to you in person. The devil will certainly try his utmost to seek revenge on you, should you be willing that this unfortunate woman be relieved of this terrible oppression. And so it came to pass. The voices were reportedly extraordinarily rough on Reverend Steiger during the sessions, and they once warned that he would come to no harm the following Friday. This happened. That Friday, undaunted, Steiger visited a sick parishioner. He was surrounded by farmland and the lifeblood of the area. Iowa and the rest of the Midwest was shifting into the era of the Great Depression, with conflicts growing over agricultural prices and productions. There were milk wars and cow wars on the horizon, complete with
milk wars
with militant
sounds
movements.
Like a disaster episode you need to cover.
No shit.
What?
A cow war? Remember the emu war in Australia?
No.
Australia waged war against emus and lost twice.
I don't recommend fighting an emu.
Apparently they can militarize pretty easily.
Organized zoo animals are not a good time.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So they actually brought in militant movements to enforce competing sides in the cow and milk wars. Devastating drought conditions were setting into the region. By his own account, a black cloud suddenly appeared before the car as he reached a bridge over a ravine. As Reverend Carl Vogel, who would go on to study this case and publish his book, relayed Steiger's experience, quote, "It seemed as if his eyes were blindfolded, and the vehicle crashed with an indescribable force, even though Steiger by that point had shifted it into the lowest gear. The car smashed through a trellis and hung over the ravine, wobbling with the weight of the driver. A farmer who heard the crash rushed over, and Steiger slowly crawled out, frightened nearly to death. He went to a doctor to get checked for injuries and then insisted on going straight to Anna. He was going like max 15 miles per hour, and he smashed through this like he was going 70.
Mm-mm, no, mm-mm.
Among the spirits believed to hold Anna in their grip, Theo sought to confront Jacob, Anna's father, and during a session said, "I solemnly command in the name of the crucified Savior of Nazareth that you present the father of this woman and that he give me answer." And a rough voice grumbled back from Anna. "Are you the unfortunate father who has cursed his own child?" Theo asked. "No." "Who are you?" "I am Judas." The moment was so chilling for the devoutly religious group that Vogel later described Steiger as some of the Franciscan sisters stampeded out of the room.
I'm so stressed.
To Father Theo's demands to know Judas's intention with Anna, the answer came. "To bring her to spare, so that she will commit suicide and hang herself. She must get the rope and she must come to me in hell." Between sessions with Father Theo, Anna tried to describe her harrowing experiences. "My body," she said, "feels as if it is filled with fire." She gave more details. "I am enveloped in a dark night as in a cloud. Very many devils are present, hissing in all directions and like flashes of lightning. I see their heads with the fiery eyes. Two gigantic serpents are above me." Anna described a vision of battle in which Lucifer, Beelzebub, and her father Jacob directed legions of devils against Saint Michael, the fight growing fiercer and fiercer. On the final night of the exorcisms, December 23rd, Father Theo recited the prayer of Saint Michael. "Carry our prayers up to God's throne, that the mercy of the Lord may quickly come and lay hold of the beast, the serpent of old, Satan and his demons, casting him in chains into the abyss." All was quiet. The storm had passed for the first few rays of sunshine washed over the room, and Anna, her body badly broken, bruised, and discolored, was still but alive. It had seemed she had been washed of the legions of demons tormenting her for so many years. Whether they were invited in by the incestuous advances of her fathers or the bewitched herbs slipped into her meals by her aunt, It seems that she was free and presumably went on to live out the rest of her days with no further trouble. Or if there was trouble, no help was ever given to Anna Auckland. My sources were Begone Satan by Father Carl Vogel, which is a crazy book. You should, if like you're interested in this, buy it and read it. It's like 42 pages long. Ghosts and Demons, The Lost Things by Kyle Cobb, Murder, Mystery, and Makeup by Bailey Sarian, who we love, The Devil's Bride, Exorcisms Past and Present by Barton Ebaum, and The Exorcism of Anna Auckland by Matthew Pearl.
What the fuck, Jenny? Oh my heavens.
You better say your prayers.
I'm peeved. I'm so peeved, shooketh. I'm scared. That was terrifying. Thank you.
You're welcome. I had so much fun doing that.
Oh my god, dude. I hope Anna never needed more help again, but I'm
gonna struggle to believe it.
Yeah. I mean, especially if they had such hold of her for so much of her life. I feel like she had to be an easy target for them.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. The thing with, like, he splashed the holy water on her and then the tap water and...
No reaction to the tap.
No reaction.
It is always and forever the speak in Latin for me.
Speak in Latin, speak in other languages, not chill.
No.
I am in the camp of, like, you can act however you want to act. You're in charge of your own body. If you want to... break your kneecaps by doing 17,000 kneels or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I have a hard time necessarily believing that that is outside of your control, but it's the brain. It's when...
Yeah.
There are very clear things, like, people should not know, they can't know.
Impossible
situations like that, yeah, that make me be like,
I mean, there were so many things that happened because the exorcisms lasted for so long, but like there were times that they would walk into the room and she would be dangling from the door frame, or she would levitate off the bed, the furniture in the room would get tossed around like there was a poltergeist, like the people in the room would be attacked. Half the nuns in that abbey or convent left.
They were like, no, thank you.
They had to be transferred out of it. They refused to stay.
What? That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
If you are wanting more Halloween lore, legends, or spooky ghost stories in your life, like the one you're listening to today, then look no further. Hi, everyone. My name is Kimmy, and I'm here with my co-host, Ryan.
Hey guys, we're the hosts of the podcast Alluring, and we're currently hosting an Alluring Halloween. So we went ahead and collaborated with some of our favorite podcasts to create a special playlist with a collection of Halloween lore, legends, and ghost stories just for you.
And throughout the month of October, we will be adding episodes to get you all in the spooky season mood. Think of it as your go-to Halloween podcast playlist.
You can listen to it today by going to Spotify and searching an Alluring Halloween. That's A-L-O-R-E-I-N-G. Or simply go to our website, alluring.com, and we'll have a direct link there.
So go check it out and enjoy the collection of spooky Halloween lore, legends, and ghost stories today.
Are you ready?
Taylor, tell me something spooky.
Okay, great. Can't wait. Okay, so my sources are an article on listverse.com by Marcus Loth and an article on TBNet.
Ooh.
All right. Brian Bethel, a journalist from Abilene, Texas, was sitting in his car in 1996, writing a checkout to the internet company when two boys approached his car door. He was writing his checkout by the light of the movie theater lights and was a little startled by the boys. At first, he thought they were going to hit him up for money. One of the boys knocked on the driver's side window and motioned to Brian to roll down the window. He had a bad feeling, but they were kids. It looked like they were between the ages of 10 and 14, so he rolled down the window. The taller of the two boys was smiling widely, something that chilled Brian to the bone. His teeth were too white, and his smile too wide. The older of the two boys had brown hair and darker skin, while the younger one had reddish hair and freckles. Brian tentatively asked, "Yes?" And the older boy answered, "Hey, mister, what's up? We have a problem. You see, my friend and I wanted to see the films, but we forgot our money. We need to go to our house to get it. Want to help us out? His voice matched his body, a youngish boy, but he was quiet and calm. Something young boys never are. He didn't talk like a kid, you know, the my dog, and then he did this thing, and then, he kind of, you know.
I can for a fact verify. That is how children speak.
Yes. Brian said, he spoke as if help was a foregone conclusion. When he grinned, it was like he was trying to say, I know something, and you're not gonna like it. But the only way you're gonna find out what it is to do what I say. The younger of the two seemed confused when Brian didn't immediately open the door and offer his help. The older boy spoke again and said, come on, mister. We just want to go to our house. We're just two little boys. Come on, mister, let us in. We can't get into your car until you do, you know. The older boy said soothingly, just let us in and we'll be gone before you know it. We'll go into our mother's house. At this point, Brian realized his hand was drifting toward the door handle. He realized he was about to open the door when he pulled back his hand, shocked. He looked at the boy for the first time and saw his eyes. They were jet black, with no white. No color, just blackness.
God. Sorry, I have full body heaves.
The boy realized he had been seen fully and erupted in anger. He screamed to let them in, and Brian threw the car in drive and booked it the hell out of there.
Brian has good survival skills.
When he looked in his rear view, the kids were gone.
No.
So I'm going to be telling you the story of the black-eyed children.
Oh my God.
Heaps!
What an intro.
Thank you. Brian went home and immediately wrote his story down and stuck it on the World Wide Web.
Smart and man.
This is the first written account that we have of the black-eyed kids. This was in 1996, and after Brian posted his story, people started coming out of the woodwork saying that they, too, had had encounters with these strange, unsettling beings. There were a few things that seemed to be a theme in most black-eyed kid stories. Normally, there's more than one child. They come in pairs or in threes. They're normally described as being between the ages of 6 and 16. They tend to hide their eyes, but eventually the person will see them, and when they do, the children get very angry. They have to be invited into the home or the car, whatever, like, the place it is.
It's giving very vampire.
Yes. A few accounts say that they have normal eyes until they are refused entry into the home, and that's when they get angry and their eyes turn black.
Ooh.
Normally, the adult in the situation is overcome with a wave of fear and dread before they realize that something is wrong with the children's eyes. In September of 2014, a tabloid newspaper called the Daily Star ran several full front page stories of a black-eyed girl who had been terrorizing the area of Cannon Chase in Staffordshire, England. Lee Brinkley, a paranormal investigator, examined the case. He claimed that a local woman had suddenly heard a terrifying scream, which she believed to be a child in danger. She ran in search of the child, and after initially not seeing anyone, she noticed that a girl, dressed in all white, stood before her. She had stated that the young girl had her hands over her eyes as if waiting for a surprise, like a birthday cake, and was completely silent. The woman, who had her young daughter with her, asked the strange girl if she was okay, which seemed to prompt her to take her hands from her face and open her eyes. That's when I saw that they were completely black, no iris, no white, no nothing, the witness told Brinkley. I jumped back and grabbed my daughter. When I looked again, the child was gone.
My eyes could not get whiter.
No, I know. Brinkley told the media that his own aunt had witnessed the same girl over 30 years earlier in 1982.
What?
Yeah. He stated that she had heard a young girl calling for help before seeing a girl dressed in all white running away from her. Brinkley's aunt caught up with her and placed a hand on her shoulder to see if she was okay, and when the girl turned around, his aunt could see that her eyes were completely black. The girl then turned and continued to run before disappearing.
Oh.
Could you imagine?
No.
No. In April 2015, a video taken from a drone flying over the fields of Cannonock, Chase appeared on YouTube. In the video, you can see a girl in white standing in the woods. It is creepy AF. I watched it. And I was sure that it was going to be a jump scare video.
Oh, yeah.
But surprisingly, it wasn't.
Just a girl?
It's a drone, so it's flying over the woods, and then they just keep zooming in, and then the drone, like, goes down into the field, and it's, like, looking into the woods, and you can see a girl standing in the woods dressed in all white with her head down. She looks like the girl from The Ring.
What in the unholy fuck?
Yeah, it was terrifying. I was, like, sitting in my hotel room, like, I think I'm done with my research for the night. No, I have to sleep by myself.
So scary, it makes you gag.
Yeah. A medium named Christine Hamlet believes that the girl is the spirit of a child who died of diphtheria during the Victorian era.
What the hell is diphtheria?
I don't know. Okay. But those who suffer from diphtheria also suffer from paralysis? Yeah. What?
Perilous.
It's a perilous disease. Perilous with fear. Paralysis of the eyes, which makes them appear dark and sunken.
Ew.
Can you imagine?
Nope.
All right. One of the earliest known accounts of the black-eyed children dates back to 1950 in Virginia.
Ooh.
According to the story, a teen boy named Harold was walking home one afternoon when he came across another boy leaning against a fence as if waiting for someone. Harold attempted to speak to him, but received no response. He was about to walk off and go on with his journey when the strange boy suddenly said, "I want to go to your house. You're going to walk me to your house." When Harold looked back at the boy, he noticed that his eyes were black.
Mm.
Then something even stranger and more chilling happened. Harold had begun to contemplate turning and running home as fast as he could when the boy blurted out, "Now don't you run away from me. You're going to walk me up to your house." Harold turned and ran away, faster than his legs have ever carried him.
Harold said, "Fuck if I will."
Goodbye. He later recalled to his parents that, and as he did so, he heard a scream behind him. A scream that sounded very familiar to that of a bobcat. Now, people have tried to figure out when the actual hell these beings are, and we've got a few options to choose from.
Okay.
So, first, people think that they're ghosts. They mention malicious ghosts that suffered from diphtheria. So, they think they might just be spirits. I don't think so.
It seems a little more malicious.
Mm-hmm. People think that they could be aliens. People think aliens are a possibility because of the strange way that they speak. They're normally too formal, especially for children. Brian Bethel pointed out that he works with kids a lot, and he was a reporter, so he would interview kids. And kids are normally very shy and polite, like they've been told that they're interrupting too often.
Mm.
The black-eyed children are normally very forward and demanding. And there's also an account from someone who claims to have been abducted by aliens, saying that when she was in the spaceship or wherever she was walking around and she saw what looked like children in like giant test tubes that had black eyes.
It's giving very Matrix.
Yeah.
Those like slime pods that they live in or whatever.
Yes. You brought up vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Some people believe that they are connected to vampire lore because they are always demanded to be invited into homes and they get angry when their request is denied. Demonologists believe that the children are of the devil himself, and if you let them in, you're allowing the devil into your home. Another strange tale of the black-eyed children comes from Louisiana.
Mm.
And
there's all kinds of spooky shit in Louisiana.
Could not get the True Blood theme song out of my head after I listened to this story. In the very first episode of True Blood, they walk into a gas station.
Yeah.
And that was the only thing that you could think. That was it. the story was broadcast on Darkness Radio in September of 2015.
We should have named the pod that.
I know. Hindsight. The encounter took place at a gas station in November of 2012. The gas station was one of the only buildings in the area. Think horror movie gas station.
Oh, God.
It was around 3 a.m., and the attendant was going about his normal duties when the power suddenly went out, plunging him into darkness. Using his own flashlight, using his phone as a flashlight, the attendant made his way back to the backup gas generator and switched it on. The backup lighting came on, but only the parking lot and the hall to the register lit up. Nothing else got power. He looked out the window and saw that 3 children were riding up on their bikes to the gas station. 2 of the 3 got off their bikes and started walking to the door. They stopped at the doorway and stood, staring at the attendant. He went over to the door and opened it and asked if the kids were okay. The young girl asked if she could use his telephone. He reached for his cell and went to hand it to her, and that's when he noticed her pitch black eyes. She said, "No, I want the real one," and pointed to the telephone landline on the counter. At this point, fear finally took over the attendant, and he pushed the door shut and locked it in one move, shouting as he did so that the girl should go home. The children stared at the attendant through the window for a moment before turning around and getting on their bikes and riding off into the darkness. The following morning, the attendant told his boss of the ordeal and requested that he go through the security cameras. However, they had been turned off during the power outage and did not come back on.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the last story I have for you about black-eyed children. In January 2016, a report appeared on the internet said to have come from an unnamed woman who not only had an encounter with black-eyed children, but made the mistake of allowing them into her home. According to the report, it was a decision that she believed would have lasting implications. The woman claimed to live in Vermont and told of how, in the middle of a blizzard one evening around a year earlier, a loud knocking sounded at the front door of the house she shared with her husband. Thinking that someone had been in a motor accident due to the weather, the woman went to the door to answer. She took a quick look out of the window and revealed footprints in the snow leading to the house, but there was no sign of a vehicle on the road. A little unnerved, she awoke her husband. At the beginning of as the banging on the door continued, he went to answer it. 2 children stood on the doorstep, a boy and a girl looking to be around 8 years old. The woman recalled they were not dressed for the cold conditions outside and that she felt instantly unnerved by their presence. Despite her probable better judgment, she invited the 2 children inside. As she ushered the 2 into the living room, she noticed how her cats appeared to be afraid of the visitors, with one in particular hissing at them as they passed. She offered to make the pair a cup of cocoa to warm them up and recalled that whenever she asked them, their reply was always the same, "Our parents will be here soon." She came into the room with 2 cups of cocoa and they looked up at her to take the drinks. She noticed with horror that where their eyes should have been, there were only 2 jet black balls like giant pupils.
Oh.
As she stared at them, they both suddenly asked if they could go to the bathroom. She tried to remain calm and directed them to it. A moment later, her husband's nose began to bleed, and then the power suddenly went out. As the woman attempted to make her way to get to her husband a tissue, she noticed that both the children were standing at the end of the hall, motionless and staring at her. They suddenly broke the silence and said, "Our parents are here."
Where'd he at?
Before opening the front door and making their way back out into the night. Even stranger, as she went to close the door, she saw the children getting into a black car as 2 tall men, both dressed in suits, stood next to it. They too entered the vehicle and drove away. In the months following, the woman's husband was diagnosed with an aggressive form of skin cancer, and although she didn't go into specifics, she stated that she also suddenly began to suffer from regular nosebleeds and described herself as being in the worst condition of her life. She's convinced that both her and her husband's ill health had been connected to that snowy night when they allowed the 2 black-eyed children into their home.
Oh my God.
There are hundreds of stories on Reddit from people who claim to have seen the black-eyed children. They see them while driving on deserted roads at night, looking through their living room windows, or even standing above them while they sleep during episodes of sleep paralysis. There is a movie about the black-eyed kids that was released in 2015, and here's the synopsis. An aspiring filmmaker embarks on a journey investigating the nightmarish and haunting stories behind the black-eyed children phenomenon. Through the firsthand accounts, professional paranormal experts, and for the first time ever, actual found footage of the so-called myths and legends are brought to life. During the making, a discovery is made that changes the life of the filmmaker and will forever change those of the viewers. Witness this growing legend in Black Eyed Children, Let Me In. Unfortunately, it has a 2.6 out of 10 rating on IMDb.
Oh, yikes.
Okay. But that's the story of the Black Eyed Children.
I'm horrified.
Taylor, I'm sorry. I really debated on whether that was paranormal or folklore. But the heaviness
it doesn't matter. It's
so bad. I can't.
Kids are creepy enough as it is.
Don't need help.
No, Theo is a lurker.
Quiet when they want to be.
When they want to be, yes. He accidentally spooks me every single day of my life.
They weigh like 50 pounds.
I know. And he just lurks and he always has socks on. Boy loves socks.
Right. And I think it's really interesting the way that they said, like, they've been told they're interrupting too much. So that's why they speak the way they are. But I also think that's what makes them sneaky. Because they don't want to get yelled at.
No.
So they just like sneak and lurk around.
And like, because we have the loft in our house. Yeah. So like, there are times when like, I'll just be sitting on the couch and I look up and he's just like looming over staring at me.
Bro.
And he's like, hey, Jenny. And I'm like, hey, bud, what you doing?
Why? Why are you like
this? And he goes, nothing. And then he just goes into his room and like.
What a creep.
I know.
Oh my God.
He doesn't
mean to. Are we sure children aren't from the devil? Like, are we sure?
You know what? It's part of them is, but like the other part of them is like such pure
joy and happiness.
Joy and happiness and innocent that it just cannot be.
There's just like,
he doesn't do it on purpose.
No. Just, as an auntie, I fully understand. Like there is so much joy and love in children's hearts. It's like unbearable.
Yeah.
But then they get so weird sometimes.
So quick.
They're quiet when they want to be and they just like stare at you.
Right.
And I feel like a zoo animal.
Being, like, witness?
Yeah. Like, I'm like, what do you want me to do? Perform for you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Kids are weird.
Kids are weird. So, yeah. Spooky. Especially if they have black eye. I could not cope with that. Mm-mm. I'm already sus.
Of children.
Of children that, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't trust strangers, adults, or minors.
Mm-mm. No. If a 15-year-old boy came up to me with, like, black-ass eyes, goodbye forever. No way.
It sounds like every boy I had a crush on when I was 15. Very.
Absolutely. That would have been yo type.
It gives very My Chemical Romance and...
Even Twilight Girl obsession.
There was a guy my freshman year in high school who... I don't know. I think he had a crush. I don't know. He gave me his Hawthorne Heights CD. And I would just like to apologize to him because I never gave that back. But you know what it did? I did really love that CD.
That's sweet.
I did enjoy it.
We got to be careful about the people we talk about in high school now because they listen to us.
He doesn't know.
I don't know.
You are the only one who has people from high school listening to you. I don't. I don't.
I'm dreadfully embarrassed.
I think I have like one, maybe.
Oh my God. I had to text Jenny out of nowhere the other day and be like,
No, don't.
Said a stupid thing. SOS, send help.
We can't relive this again.
Oh no. I had to go downstairs and talk to my husband about it and be like, I'm an idiot.
And here's what happened.
Here's what happened. Listen,
we're just trying to like relive our like childhood crush trauma. And now all of a sudden it's coming back to haunt us.
Right. Like, so nothing is funnier to Claire, my littlest sister, than me telling her about my high school experience.
It's so kitsch.
It's so, so, like, bizarre to her. Because she's got social media. She's always had social media.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, girl, we had to guess.
Yep.
We had to, like, ask our best friend's best friend.
Like, who is this?
Does he like me?
We have to send notes in class. God.
Oh my God, I have to show you something after we wrap.
The good news is nobody ever had a crush on me.
That you know of.
Oh, no.
It's okay. You can slide into Taylor's Instagram DMs if you had a crush on Jenny.
No.
Let me know.
Nobody did. I was incredibly unlikable between the ages of like 12 to 24.
Same.
And you know, honestly, you could probably round that on up to 28. I have a habit of not being kind to people that I was, like, romantically interested in. I was the bully on the playground.
You were the one, like, pulling on pigtails?
Oh my god. Awful. At any point in my life, if I bullied you, I probably had a crush on you.
Love this fact
just,
for you.
Just mean. And you know what? I bully Ian every day of his life.
Same. I hurt Ryan's feelings in the middle of Walmart yesterday, and I did not mean to. We're talking about jeans, and he's not an incredibly tall person. He's like 5'9".
Yeah.
And
which is a totally fine height.
Yeah. And we're shopping for jeans, and he loves, like, kind of like baggy, loose fitting, very cash jeans.
Sure.
We're talking about, like, going to my brother's wedding, and I was like, I just think that you probably need to get, like, a fitted jean,
please,
for this, because you have shorter legs and a long torso. And if this did not end his entire day.
Oh, no.
He still brought it up to me this morning.
Yeah, oh, he's still hurt.
He's still hurt. And I was like, I'm not making fun of you. I'm stating facts.
It's not mean if it's true.
It's not mean if it's true. And also, like.
And what?
I can't wear, like, baggy jeans because my body style doesn't agree with that.
I can't wear anything strapless, period, ever.
Right. Like, you just gotta dress for your body type.
You're just for your body, and your body is your body, and that's okay.
Men.
Oh, bless them.
Getting their feelings hurt.
I would just like to say that men need to start wearing fitted jeans, period. Mm. Period, mm-hmm. Period.
Yeah, we did get an outfit sorted for the wedding, so.
Good. Ian does not have his outfit sorted for the wedding, and it's his wedding.
For your wedding?
For our wedding, the wedding where we're getting married to each other.
We should probably work on that.
Yeah, we should. It's on my to-do list.
What is the idea? Are we doing, like, jeans and, like, a jacket?
No. Well, it's going to be 80 degrees. I think we're thinking very... Listen, if anybody has any, like, good male beach wedding attire ideas, go ahead. Send that on over to me.
We got a pair of, like, light linen pants from TJ Maxx.
I would love a light linen. He seems to be a little set on... He would like an actual pair of suit pants and, like, a button down and a vest. No blazer.
Okay.
But, like, you know how Ian is. Like, he likes to be,
mm-hmm.
like, a little cutie patootie.
Yeah.
So, he's gonna have a lot of opinions about it. We just literally don't have time to go.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting married in, like, 2 months from when this episode comes out.
Stop!
So... You're, like, the 30-day mark, girl. Not 30, 90.
No. Oh my god.
90 days from, like.
That's the scariest thing you've said this whole episode.
Oh my god. All right. Do you have a bright and shiny for today?
Yeah, I'm getting married in 90 days.
60 days.
Fuck.
From the time that this comes out. I can't wait.
Oh my gosh. It's
gonna be a blast.
It is gonna be a blast. If I can get to the day, it will be absolutely magical.
It will be. Yeah. Can't wait.
So excited. Yeah, my bright and shiny is that I get to marry the love of my life in 60 days.
Holy shit, dude.
Holy shit balls. If I think about it too long, like, I will start to cry and have feelings and just be
emotionals.
It's a weird thing where, like, your entire life you told yourself that you're never going to get married, you're never going to find a partner, you don't want to blah, blah, blah. But then, like, you know what? Sometimes shit just happens.
Yeah, I feel like you didn't go through, like, a whole lifetime of, like, you're not going to get married. I feel like that was, like, one summer of your life.
Was it?
Yeah. Where we were having a lot of deep, dark feelings about never getting married.
We had a turbulent 2019.
Yeah, and then we got married. Well, and then we met Ian.
Yeah.
And
met.
Well,
reconnect. Yeah. Yeah.
Rekindled
a relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't buy the you were desperately not trying to get married for
most
of your life.
I'm okay with, like, having a partner, but, like, the idea of, like, the institution of marriage has always, like, really freaked me out.
Yeah.
But I'm scared of the government. Is that what I don't like about it? I don't like the government in my affairs at all. I just don't.
Like, legally?
Yeah. Hmm. I don't like making choices that affect my tax forms.
Is that what it is?
I think so. Okay. I think it's just taxes.
All right.
Anyway, what's your bright and shiny?
I think my Bright and Shiny is just like this month and getting to do all the shit that we've been talking about
for so long
and finally get to see it all happen.
It's all coming together.
Yeah, so I think that's my Bright and Shiny is just it's finally October. We have been like hyped about all this shit for so long. That's my Bright and Shiny.
We are really on like an upward roller coaster right now.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Keep sharing us with your friends. We love it. We love every single message y'all send us.
It is literally so helpful. Anytime somebody sends us like a DM on Twitter and Instagram,
we screenshot it and send it to each
other. Oh my God. And then we have to like FaceTime and...
Oh my gosh. Our Google Duo. They should start charging us for how much we have to Google Duo each other. I
swear to God.
It's wild.
Yeah.
But yeah. So go follow us on the social medias. Definitely follow us because we have the things happening.
On the Instagram. Check it out. Get your calendar. Lots of cool stuff. Come see us at DeadCon. Follow us on Instagram for the giveaway. Follow us on the Instagram for when we go live. Keep an eye out for the mashup episode on Halloween.
Yeah. And do we have a time for Grab Bag Live?
It will be posted on the Instagram.
Okay. Like today we're going to post it on the Instagram?
Yes. Okay. So it'll be in like with the photos for today. For today.
Okay. Great. So we'll see you then. Be kind to
yourself.
See
you then. See
you.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, I'm gonna have to do my makeup.
I'm gonna have to look better than I look regularly.
Dang it.
Rats. All right. Have fun. Be kind to yourself.
And to each other.
Goodbye.